Trying to grab all the groceries in one trip? Oof, not how you would have done that. You know sometimes less is more. Like when you drive less and save with the USAA annual mileage discount. USAA, get a quote today.
Hello and welcome to the Boys in the Band podcast. We're back with another edition of Tied to the Noughties. I'm Peter Smith and as ever, Rich Gallagher is here.
Yep, thanks for joining us everyone. A quick shout out to our sponsors before we get started. Signature Brew. Remember, they've got a great deal for our listeners which gets you 10% off their fantastic range at signaturebrew.co.uk. They've got tons of varieties on offer and some great mixed cases too that they'll deliver straight to your door. Just remember to enter Boys in the Band at checkout to get that 10% off.
Yeah, highly recommend it. I'm actually running pretty low on my stock at the moment. I might have to refill the cupboards soon. Rody is the one that I like. It's a light IPA, Rich, if you're into that sort of thing. Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Goes down very, very nice. Yeah, it does. Too easily. But yeah, they got so many different varieties. Studio Lager, Backstage IPA. Even the gluten-free one, Rewind, I think it's called, is really good too. So, yeah. Lows on their samples, so do make use of that great offer.
Yeah, absolutely. But this podcast is really about October Drift, which sounds like it could be a beer from a fancy brewery, doesn't it? No, they're actually working on their own breweries. I don't know. We didn't actually ask them about this. I don't know why. This is absolute gold. But they're working on their own coffee brew for some fancy coffee place near their studio down in Taunton. This is a very strange tangent to come in on about an indie band, but we'll pick it up. And we've got Dan and Kieran from the band on telling us about their second album, I Don't Belong Anywhere, which is out in a couple of months on the back of their 2020 debut, Forever Whatever.
Yep, we've had a sneak listen, so really enjoyed it. And they've got an editor's connection, actually, for our Noughties fans. Their debut album was produced by Justin Lockie from the editors. They've supported them on tour as well. And there's definitely a little bit of influence in their sound in places too, along with a bit of a heavier sound at times.
Yeah, they certainly do crash into those guitars and drums at certain points. Very, very good mix, actually. I think of the heavy and the light. As Rich said, we've heard this new album. It's good fun. It's really worth a listen. So keep your ears peeled for that. But first, have a listen to this. The October Drift Boys on their two albums, Either Side of the Pandemic, Life on the Road, travelling all the way up from Somerset, all around the UK, trying to get their sound out there. And of course, their inspirations from the 2000s.
Right, this week on the Boys in the Band podcast, Tied to the Noughties edition, we've got Dan Young and Kieran Roy from October Drift. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hello.
Hey, good. Thank you.
Dan. Yeah, good. Thanks. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. Yeah. We're enjoying the summer. We've had a bit of a break from the podcast. We had a bit of I think both had a crazy period at work, and then it's summer holidays and chilling out. And now it's good to get back into it with you guys and sitting down and talking about you. But I guess you're in a pretty excited mode with the new album. Approaching, yeah. It's on the horizon, isn't it? A couple of months away now.
Yeah, it is a few months away. Yeah, really excited to have it out. Like seems like a bit of a long time coming in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like we started recording it. Well, we started writing it before the pandemic, I guess. Like some of the songs, and then started recording it when stuff was allowed to be opened up. We recorded it all ourselves, and we got a little studio in Somerset.
Yeah, sort of out of like circumstance, we just recorded it ourselves, and a lot of it was written during when nothing much was going on. So we've released a few singles off of the album already, and then the album's coming out in October. So yeah, it'll be good to get it out and to play those songs live, and yeah, we're looking forward to it. We've had a good summer as well, like playing. We've played.
We've had a really good run of festivals. I think it's probably our best festival season so far.
Yeah. And then we've got a tour around the album release in October as well. So yeah, we're kind of in a good space at the minute.
Good, keeping busy. Yeah, we've got a sneak listen to it as well. I Don't Belong Anywhere. Really, really, really enjoying this album. You can see the progression from that first album, Forever Whatever. So tell us a bit about that journey then, really, guys, because Forever Whatever landed early 2020, January 2020. I guess the pandemic hit in a few months later. I don't know how much that disrupted the promotion of that. And then, as you say, you've written this one during a pandemic, and thankfully we can be out going to gigs, and you guys can be playing gigs for this one when it comes out in October. But yeah, I guess a strange time to be releasing your first two albums.
Yeah, like we still consider ourselves lucky that we even got that first album out in the, because we basically got the album out in the January, did the album tour in the February, and then went into lockdown in March. So it was like, at least we did get it in there just before we went into the lockdown. Yeah,
we got a full tour from it.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Which I know so many people didn't.
We were also kind of like, after like 2 years of not gigging and stuff, we were like, will anyone even come to gigs? Will we be completely forgotten? Like, we just did this one album and then it's like, where do we pick up again? And it kind of felt like we picked up from where we left off, which was like, cool, because we were kind of anxious of like, will anyone who came on that last tour even come to another gig, you know, all that time later and stuff like that. So we did obviously have a lot more gigging and festivals and stuff planned for the album one release, but it also gave us a chance to write and record the second album. And I think we've got a better second album because of that time and space. So kind of obviously shit, but there was a couple of positives to take from it. But the first album came about from touring with editors, which probably links quite well with this podcast, with Justin Lockie from Editors. After we played with him night after night in Europe, sort of said he wanted to put out our debut album. So we ended up going to record with him in Doncaster for a week, and then we recorded Forever Whatever with him, and then put it out through his label Fizz Ed Records, and that kind of really got the ball rolling with the first album and the album cycles.
Awesome. Yeah, it must be really tricky with that sort of momentum is so important for a band, isn't it? And I can think about you, like you're talking about doing that tour just before lockdown hit. You must feel like you're sort of right, you know, getting somewhere really, really significant in your journey to suddenly be halted, but then to be able to perhaps put your momentum into the writing of the new album instead.
Yeah, because after like a long time of playing gigs to like practically no one, and then like we've done great gigs and stuff like that, but it was like that album tour felt like every gig we were doing was like better than the next almost. And it was just like everything was kind of building great. And then boom. I mean, naively at the time, and we were like, I mean, this coronavirus thing is it's not going to stick around. We're like, shit, we've got, you know.
Yeah. Well, me and Chris, the drummer, we went and saw Editors at Wembley Arena in March, which I think it was like the week before lockdown or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking, even then we were talking, we were like, oh yeah, I think it'll be all right. You know, like, I'm pretty sure it's not as bad as it. Yeah. And then it was, I think we also tried to keep momentum up during lockdown. Like, we did a little EP, an acoustic EP, and recorded stuff. Like, and then me and you did some videos where you'd record a little bit and send it to me. And yeah, then we did quite a few live stream. Yeah,
acoustic gigs and interviews, and released that EP and did all we could to just kind of, it was as much for our own sanity as anything else, I think, just to just to do something.
Probably engagement with the fans as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, keep people on board. Yeah. So tell us about that different process for the second album, then doing it yourself, and as you say, in your own studio as well.
Yeah, like, we started the studio, I think it was 2018.
Yeah, we did that Editors tour in the EU, and then got back like the day after, and we'd put the lease down for this the studio space, and got back and then straight into like drilling and making like wooden baffles and stuff, acoustic baffles. So
cool.
That was a cool time too.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to hire a little studio from our old college tutor, who had this little studio way out in the sticks, and it got broken into. And then we had basically a guitar and a...
Yeah, you had a guitar.
I had a guitar nicked. And it wasn't ours, but an amp head of another band's was nicked. And they basically didn't really like do anything to... It was really unsecure.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we were like, well, someone knows that there's just a whole studio here. And they like left with what they could carry. But it was like, they didn't really like tighten the baffles at all. It was just like... It's so easy to break into. So we just sort of started looking for somewhere we could do something ourselves. And it's probably like one of the best things we've ever done, like as a band, just because we've always got, we hire out a few bands, come and rehearse there and stuff. And that pretty much covers the rent. And then it's just a space we can go and like write and record. And yeah. So that's where we ended up, yeah, recording the whole album, which was quite a different process from the recording the first one. Like Justin produced the first record and had quite a clear vision of like how it should sound, and he knew his own studio, and it was and we banged it out really quickly as well. We did it all in a week, so, and there wasn't like, everything was kind of first take and stuff like that, or second take, you know, they kind of rattled through it, which I think added to the energy of it, and nothing was overthought too much. And then the second album, it was just us four. And Justin did have some input over like over the phone and stuff. Like, I'll try this. We sent him some demos and stuff like that. Yeah. And he said, try a few different things. And he sent us a bunch of mics in the post. But it's not like a professional studio at our place. It's like, you know, it's cool. It's good. But we demoed and stuff there, but we'd never like expected to actually make a proper record there. So it was like, it was a bit of a learning curve, and it took a bit longer than we expected. But I think we've got something that's like definitely lives up to the first record, and yeah, we're really proud of.
Right. So when you get the chance to have your own space, your own studio, what's your favorite part of that? What's your favorite bit in there? Have you got a special sort of, I don't know, you got some sort of setup that you particularly really favor that you've just done specifically for yourselves, indulged yourselves?
I'd say that we've put a new rug in. Kieran's grandparents gave him a new rug, and we've put that in, and it in the control room. It just makes it feel really nice in there.
Yeah.
And like, especially we got a little lamp in there, an old little lamp, and that just, yeah, it feels nice sitting in that room. Apart from in the summer where it's like, it gets really hot. so we got to get the fan on.
Yeah, I got that rug, and we were looking at it because it's got the sofa, and it's got all the desk and all the gear and stuff like that. And we were like, we're going to have to take all this out and then put the rug in. Yeah, it was worth it, I think.
Yeah, we spent all day on that, putting that rug in. But yeah.
The worst bit was putting all the rock wall and stuff in the ceiling. Yes. It's like nasty, that stuff. And it's like, gets in your hair and in your eyes and
itchy.
Yeah.
Super itchy.
Whatever you're saving up for, a CD from Sandy Spring Bank lets you grow your savings at a guaranteed rate. Right now, earn interest at 4.5% APY on an 8-month CD special or 4.25% APY on a 14-month CD special. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com/CD specials. Minimum opening deposit to earn the annual percentage yield is $500 for the 8-month CD special and $2,500 for the 14-month CD special. Member FDIC.
You mentioned about renting the space out to other bands and that. So what's the band scene like down in your part of the world? Taunton, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's not really much of one. There's no venue here at the minute. And like, there's a few bands kind of in the southwest who come and, like a band, Gina Bears. They're really cool. They've come and recorded and rehearsed. They're a band called Bridges, come and rehearse sometimes. And a few bands like have come and used it. Crows have come and rehearsed there before when they've been touring and stuff like that. But it's not much of a scene where we are, to be honest.
So does that mean a lot of long road trips when you guys were starting out trying to get yourself
100%, yeah. And I still see it as like a pros and cons thing. Like, I still massively feel like we missed out on, and still kind of miss out on being part of like a scene, like a thriving band scene. It meant we never got like, from day one, we kind of were always driving to London or to wherever across the UK. And in that sense, we've built everywhere kind of together, as opposed to being stuck in one place that we struggled to break out of. There was a little venue where we live in Taunton, where me and Dan both used to work when we first turned 18. We worked in this little venue called The Perfect Fifth.
That was
for
really
about
cool.
a year or yeah. something before it closed down. And that was really cool. And there was a little scene of college bands and like local bands that were doing some cool stuff at the time.
There was a few bands that would come down as well. Like I remember Hoodlums coming down, and we had the Blue Tones. Oh, and we had the Sugar Hill Gang as well. So I don't know how they landed that, but that was a really cool
It was cool. It was just a little like 200 cap basement venue. Yeah, it was, that was cool. And at that time, it was felt really cool as well, being like 18, like just turned 18, working in this bar. And there was a little bit of a scene. And yeah, I think that's still sort of part of that, like being a bit, yeah, I mean, it hasn't really felt like there's anything like that since where we are. But we've still, but then we've been close to Bristol, and we've sort of got to know the venues in Bristol and the music scene there and stuff like that. And same in, from gigging and stuff, Sheffield, Manchester and Glasgow and stuff like that. We've kind of got friends and bands and music and stuff all over now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Those early days would have been sort of around the mid-noughties, weren't they? That's sort of the era that our pod focuses on. So what sort of bands were you sort of into at that time, influenced by perhaps as October Drift?
Well, we were in a band when we first went to college, which was in what, like 2008, 2009?
Yeah, like yeah, yeah. The late 2000s.
We were in a different. It was the same four of us, but we had a different name at the time. And we would go to. There was a record shop called Black Cat Records as well, which is run by a guy called Phil Harding, and it was like, whenever we had a break or like free at college and stuff like that, we could just go and hang out with Phil and he'd make you a cup of tea and he'd show you what he'd just got in that week and stuff like that, which again is like really missed in like town. But that was, especially at those like formative years, it was like really cool to have that, someone who'd go, oh, this has just come in, and like, you should have a listen to this. And now and then we'd be like, actually got enough to buy something.
Yeah, never. It must be like,
once every couple of months, you'd be like, I might actually buy something today.
I remember him just being like, right, Dan, just put the kettle on. Like, I know you're not going to buy anything. Just make me a cup of tea and we'll listen to some music.
But it was like those kind of, a lot of those, I don't know, like indie bands of that era, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. Like before we sort of started going to Phil's, I guess it was bands like Arctic Monkeys and Razorlight. And I mean, In Rainbows and stuff was already
big. Yeah, I don't think I even got into that until maybe
Temper Trap, actually.
Yeah, like Temper Trap and Foles. I think Foles had just released Total Life Forever, and I remember having that. But actually, I don't think that on
a film like Holloways and stuff like that as well. Like, and and then we went to sort of started going to Black Cat, and he introduced us to bands like the Animal Collective and like
Grizzly Bear
and like some weirder stuff like that.
Yeah, that was a bit off the beaten. I think you don't think he did, but I'm sure he introduced us to Bon Iver, like the first album came out.
Yeah,
you saw them at Glastonbury in like 2009
or something.
Yeah.
Because Glastonbury's just down the road from us as well. So that was always like, although there wasn't much of a scene, we always had like the biggest music festival kind of within reach of where we lived, and that's always been felt like culturally, you know, kind of important.
Yeah. So you guys played there, didn't you, a few years ago?
Yeah, in 2017. Mental. Yeah.
Doorstep. Yeah.
Mental. Like I said, like we've been going since we were teenagers, and it was like always sort of dreamed of playing on, like especially the John Peel stage. Like for that to be our first Glastonbury gig, it was like, whoa, we don't, we're not big enough for this. Like,
yeah. I remember, what are we doing here? I remember Chris, because Chris got the call, like our agent rang Chris, and we were in the Cowshed studio, the one before our studio now. We were in there and he just came running in like, Steve said we're playing Glastonbury, and we were just like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah, yeah. Vivid memory of that.
Same when Steve gave the editors
tour support. As well, yeah,
cool. It was like, whoa, what the fuck? Because I mean, editors were one of those bands we were listening to at that time in college. Like, it's really surreal to then like play gigs with them, and then for them to be like, oh, I'd like to record your album. It's like, whoa, what? Like, it's kind of surreal.
Yeah. I remember I had this this little iPod. What were they called? The smaller ones. Was it the mini iPod mini? And they could hold, I don't know, about 40 megabyte or something of music. And I bought it off Alex, the bass player, because mine was smaller, and I traded it with him and he bought something better. And I had An End Has a Start, Block Party, Weekend in the City, Biffy Clyro Puzzle, And then I think, yeah, that Foals Total Life Forever. And I used to just, that's all I could fit on it. And I could never really be bothered to go and move it around.
Yeah.
And I just, on the way to college there and back, I just like pump it like so loud in my headphones. And then, yeah, to play with editors was like, was really surreal.
Yeah. I mean, on a, like also Glass Vegas was a band that we like loved at that time. And then they came down to our King Tut's gig in Glasgow and like chat to them and stuff like that. And it's like, it's weird to get that sort of confirmation from the bands that you, that we've looked up to since we were first building our own musical tastes and stuff like that, that they like what we're doing now. It's kind of, like I said, kind of surreal, but like
cool,
a nice feeling.
Yeah,
really cool as well. Like obviously Justin can help produce that first album and then sort of be a bit of a sounding board for the second one, perhaps. How important is that, do you think, for young emerging bands like yourselves to have that, those sort of mentors really from the previous generation?
I think it's really important. I'm sure it can be done without, but like it was definitely really helpful for us.
Yeah, I think it's always really nice to have just someone, obviously someone we trust because Justin's been there and done it. Who, you know, when you just kind of get, you've played these songs and you've demoed them over and over again and played them over and over again, and you kind of get lost in what that you think the song should sound like, but to have someone's fresh ears come in and go, actually, why don't you try this? And because we trust his opinion, like maybe if it was someone who we didn't trust, it would be harder, but that's awesome. And he did that with loads of songs, like took it in a, not in a completely different direction, but like changed the drums, which made like in little parts, or changed the guitar part or something, which really lifted the song. Yeah,
and a few times he said like, oh, that's cool, we thought it was like finished, and he'd be like, but you haven't, it's not like, it's not finished, like you go and write,
yeah, go write and write a chorus,
you know, like
write a big chorus.
You're like, oh, what, it's so done, he's like, no, it's not, like, and you're like, okay. And there was a few times that, like stuff like that came up on the second album. The first album we just sent in basically everything we'd ever written, which was like, we sent him like 60 songs,
yeah, loads and loads of,
which are like really, really poor quality demos, and he just trawled through them all and like fished out what he thought we should record. And between us, we kind of like whittled it down to about 15 or something, and went and recorded them with him.
So guys, tell us a little bit then about this new album coming out on October 14th. I Don't Belong Anywhere, as I said, me and Rich got a sneak listen, really like it, but for the listeners, what can they expect from album number two?
Glad you like it. I think it's, I think it as an album, like the first album was basically like everything we'd ever written, like I just said, like kind of everything we'd ever written and then whittled down into like making something cohesive. Whereas this album was kind of written together and therefore is like just by nature more cohesive. It's kind of more direct, kind of punchier, but it's kind of heavier, but also punchier.
I think because it's like the drums are more direct, and even though you said like it's heavier, that I think because it's less band in a room, I guess, like the first album sounded like we were all playing in the same room, but this maybe doesn't as much, but it kind of makes it feel slightly less in your face, even though it is,
I think it's more of a rock record perhaps. And it's a bit darker as well, I think. And it's really a reflection of like where it was written as well at the time. A lot of it was, it has those themes of sort of like feeling directionless and like a bit lost and a bit like questioning like what you're doing and what your worth is. And it, like a lot of that has come into the album, and it's kind of for anyone who's felt like they don't quite belong and, or, you know, they don't quite fit in, or yeah, like an outsider. And again, that kind of ties in with us not being part of a scene and stuff like that as well. There's kind of themes of that as well, like,
and you also mentioned you got the October tour to promote it. Must be very excited to get back on the road with it. We saw you playing in London, date that was best for us, the Lexington and Comedia and Brighton, another place close to our, any other dates on there that you're excited about, any locations you've not played before,
kind of back to the main cities again.
Yeah.
I think like, just, we did Manchester Deaf Institute on the last one, And we're doing that again on the next one. But hope, like, it was really close to selling out last time. So I think if it can, it looks like it will.
Yeah, the ticket sales have been like strong. Like, well, it's the strongest we've ever done on this tour already. Really excited to play London, Manchester, Sheffield, Glasgow, Newcastle. All of it, to be honest, it's going to be great, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We've never done the Clooney before in Newcastle. And like, I always heard good things about that. So I think that one should be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, good luck with it, guys. And yeah, thanks for coming on. I think I might drag Rich down to that Lexington gig, get you down to London, Rich.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Go and maybe grab a beer afterwards as well.
Perfect. That'd be great.
Good night out. All right, guys. Well, best of luck with new album, I Don't Belong Anywhere, October 14th. Looking forward to that. And thanks again for coming onto the Boys in the Band podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Thanks.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.